again, I'll gut you like a fish.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Behold! Fish boy!
This is my boomstick!
Red Rum.
Carpet Day!
We'll tear your soul apart.
Oh, yes. There will be blood.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
What the prime time, bitch?
Hail, Rodma.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Three from Hell podcast, and Happy New Year. I'm Sam, and I am joined once again by Justin and Melee, and we are the OG Three from Hell. Mm-hmm. And today, we started a new franchise, kicking it off with the first VHS film. Precursor, before we get started, the way we do the podcast for this franchise is going to be a little wacky, just because of the nature of it. But we'll see how it goes. Hopefully it won't be a complete mess. VHS was released on October 5th, 2012. I don't know why I started with the release date. We have a lot of directors that we will get to. We have a lot of writers that we will get to. Your producers are Simon Barrett, Garen Binkow, Brad Miska, and Roxanne Benjamin. Cinematography mm-hmm. done by Adam Wingard, Glenn McQuaid, Radio Silence, Ty West, Victoria K. Warren, and Andrew Draws Palermo. Editing done by David Bruckner, Glenn McQuaid, Ty West, Simon Barrett, Matt Bettinelli-Ulpin, and Tyler Gillette. Music done by Lucas Clyde. Your production companies are Bloody Disgusting and The Collective. This film was distributed by Magnet Releasing with an initial release date at the Sundance Festival at January 22nd, 2012, again with a full release date on October 5th, 2012, with a runtime of 116 minutes. We do not have a budget listed, but we do have a box office bring-in of $1.9 million.
Interesting.
Pretty good for an anthology-style film where, you know, it's just a bunch of short films slapped together. If you want to watch VHS, you have a lot of fucking options to watch it. You can watch it for free on Tubi, Pluto TV, Zumo Play, the Roku channel, Vudu, or whatever they're calling it now, Fandango at Home, or what the fuck ever.
Yeah.
Plex, and you can also watch it with a subscription on Peacock, Sling TV, Amazon Prime, Fubo, and you can rent and or buy it from wherever you rent and or buy your movies. Now, as we get started here, I am going to run down the wraparound story, also known as Tape 56. And before we get started, there are spoilers from this point forward, so if you don't want the movie to be spoiled for you, you haven't seen it before, or you just want to watch it again, get a little refresher before we start talking about it, now is the time to go do that, because you can also watch it with us at patreon.com/youdamnright for just $1 a month. How crazy is that? What do you think, Michael?
I think that is very affordable.
Justin?
I'm surprised he thinks at all.
All right, yeah, that's true. That's pretty real. Well, without any further ado, let's kick it off with Tape 56. With the prologue, as we start the film, we get the characters of Brad, Rox, Zach, and Gary. There's some guys that are going around and doing some fucked up shit to make some money. We see them in a parking garage, and they are sexually assaulting this woman, which is unfortunate. We get a bunch of cuts of them going through and like busting shit in a house and all this good stuff. They break into a house eventually. Before they do that, they're in this house and they're talking about what they need to do to make money. Turns out they are sexually assaulting these women for money to like a fucked up porn website or some shit. They eventually break into a house where we see this old dude who is dead in a chair with like a bunch of TVs in front of him playing static and with a bunch of VHS tapes just strung around on the floor. They're there to collect or to steal a tape for their, it was like an anonymous client or whatever. They're there to steal a VHS tape, but as they quickly find out, this house and this guy has a bunch of VHS tapes just kind of strung along his house. And it is there's some stuff happening anyway. This is where we get into the first short film of VHS. Before we do that, Tape 56 was directed by Adam Wingard and written by Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett. You will hear those names come up quite a bit. We get into Amateur Night, which is directed by David Bruckner, written by David Bruckner and Nicholas Tarkowski. The actors in Amateur Night are as listed. We have Hannah Fearman as Lily, Mike Donlan as Shane, Joe Sykes as Patrick, Drew Sawyer as Clint, and Jasper Lewis as Lisa.
Lisa.
So, Amateur Night. We have the characters Shane, Patrick, and Clint. They are in a hotel room, and they are forcing Clint to wear these glasses with a hidden camera inside of them as they are about to go out to a bar to try to pick up girls and have sex and film it non-consensually. While we're at the bar, we see Shane talking to this girl, Lisa, at the bar, who is very drunk. We also see Lily, who comes up to Clint and tells him, whispers to him that she likes him, which freaks him the fuck out. Fast forward a little bit, we get back. It is Lily and Lisa are with the three guys not in a cab, actually. They're drunk driving, which I am in full support of. driving back to their hotel room. They're doing cocaine. They're doing all that shit. We get back to the hotel room. Lily is kind of freaking out a little bit. She's being really weird. Shane gets really pissed off when Lisa is like blackout drunk and he still considers having sex with her, but I guess he gets talked out of it. Lily is like very obviously attracted to Clint at this point, but he keeps going in and out of the bathroom because he's freaking the fuck out. He's really drunk and he took a bunch of drugs. He's not having a good time with it. Shane attempts to have sex with Lily, who seems to kind of go for it at first. Like, she's kind of with it, but only with Clint also in the picture. Clint gets freaked out. He goes back in the bathroom. Patrick then who is like Patrick cackling in the fucking corner on the couch the entire time, by the way. He's just having a good time. He attempts to have a threesome with Lily and Shane, but Lily is not a fan of that and bites Patrick's hand. He's like bleeding all over the place. He runs into the bathroom. He's freaking out. He's in there with Clint. They peek out the bathroom door. And Patrick goes and confronts Lily, who then slaps the shit out of him. And then Lily starts ripping Shane's fucking intestines out of his body. Patrick and Clint run back into the bathroom, freaking the fuck out. They finally decide that Patrick is going to confront her with the shower rod, like the shower curtain rod.
I can't think of it being
something
anything
along
else.
Those lines. He goes up to attack her with it. She grabs it, takes him down, starts drinking his blood or some shit. Clint's hiding by the bed. Like, you don't see all of it, but you see enough. Lily then rips off Patrick's cock and balls, throws them on the floor. Clint freaks the fuck out. Lily also throws up on Patrick after this. Clint freaks the fuck out and runs down the stairs where he trips and breaks his wrist I've mentioned it while we were watching it. One of the most cringeworthy moments of the entire movie. His bone is sticking out of his wrist. Lily comes down the stairs. She is almost fully transformed. At this point, her face is all fucking crazy. Her body, she's all covered in blood and shit. And then she sucks Clint's dick. I don't know how else to put that. I don't know any other way to frame that. That's what happens. Clint is crying and terrified at this point. Lily notices this. She starts freaking out and starts crying. He runs out. He's, you know, smacking on the fucking windows and doors at the hotel, but no one will help him. And it is while this, he's running up to this group of people that are sitting around a truck. Lily is now full transformation, a full winged succubus, lifts Clint up. And while they are flying away, his glasses fall off and fall all the way to the ground. And then that is all we have for Amateur Night. I fucking love Amateur Night. Such a good way to start the film. Such a great way to start the franchise. It's so good. I don't really have a lot of words for it. It's just very fucking good. And it was so good that they made a full-length film about it called Siren, which I still have not seen. I don't know how I haven't seen it yet, but I still haven't seen it. Yeah, what a great fucking way to just to kick off this film and eventually what would become the VHS franchise. And I feel like whenever this movie does get brought up, that this is the short that gets brought up the most, because it is the first one, and it is such a cool premise, and it's done in such a cool way with the glasses where it's very natural and everything that's happening. But I think this is also the one where Melee said that it's scary because it feels so real.
Yes.
And I think they did a very, very, very good job in making it feel very real. And I give Amateur Night a 9.
Ooh.
Justin.
Okay, I'm a little surprised by you giving it a 9 because...
Oh boy.
Well, No. This is kind of like the perfect VHS segment.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's not my personal favorite, or it's not like special to me specifically, it's the, for lack of a better way of describing it, it's the Halloween of VHS segments.
Okay.
Where, like, it's the perfect way to start the movie. It's the perfect way to start the franchise. It got its own solo movie. It's the first solo movie that they gave it, which again, I have not seen either.
Yep.
But literally, I don't think you could do any better than this in regards to starting a franchise and giving a vibe to something conceptually.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with what they're doing here with the very first VHS movie, where it's very much it's the first one, so they don't know what they're doing yet.
Yeah, it's open season. You can kind of do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. So with that in mind, despite my personal grievances with the short, Amateur Night's a 10. There's nothing
that's,
else.
I mean, that's fair. I can't argue with that. I almost gave it a 10.
I did not
give it a 10 because it's not my favorite in this film, personally.
It's not my favorite in this film either, but still think that it's still worth
it. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I'm right there with you. I was very close to giving it a 10 myself, but.
And to an extent, like, they did make a solo movie out of it, so, like...
They did. But they also made a solo movie out of another short later in the franchise. I don't know why. Yeah, anyway, Melee, your thoughts on Amateur Night.
As Justin said, this is the Halloween of the VHS franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I think this, aside from the main story, this provides, like, the perfect template for every other short film that follows, and it pretty much sets the tone of what you're going to expect from every single segment. And as I said, like, during the thing, like, it looks so real, and it's not even from, like, the scary aspects that, you know, the spoopy, but just, like, seeing the way they act, it almost feels like you're watching, like, an actual, like, recording of people who are doing questionable things.
Yep.
That you almost feel uncomfortable watching because you don't know, like, you sometimes forget, is this a movie or am I watching something that I'm not supposed to? So right, I think that's why I feel like
just for that alone, I might have to give it a 10 just because it's just so perfect in how it sets up. And it sets up the tone for like everything else that we see. All right, Justin, take us out.
What is your score?
A 10.
10, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I can't argue with that. Well, we leave Amateur Night and we go back to Tape 56, aka the wraparound story. When we get back, we see that Rox has discovered that Brad has disappeared, which is weird. We go down to the basement. We have Zach and Gary, and they have found hundreds of those unmarked VHS tapes on the shelves in the basement. And instead of searching through all of them to find the one that they are there to get for, they are there to get... What the fuck? They grab all the fucking tapes instead of the one they came to get. There you go. But as they're doing that, we see a person down in the basement for a split second, and it freaks the guys the fuck out. We come back upstairs and Rox puts in another tape in the VCR, and it is Second Honeymoon, which Justin is going to tell us all about.
So a married couple, Sam and Stephanie, go out to the West for their second honeymoon and rent a hotel room. The couple visit a Wild West themed attraction where Stephanie receives a prediction from a mechanical fortune teller. The prediction says that she will be visited by a loved one. Later that night, while at the hotel, the couple is visited by a strange woman. The events are not shown on camera, who asks for a ride in the morning. Sam declines her requests, and the girl leaves later. When Sam and Stephanie go to sleep, an unseen camera wielder enters the room and silently watches them both, and even softly touches Stephanie's skin with a switchblade. The person leaves her alone, though, and steals $100 from Sam's wallet and goes into the bathroom, where we can see in the mirrors that the person is a woman wearing a mask. She puts Sam's toothbrush in the toilet. The next day, Sam notices his money missing and accuses Stephanie of taking it while they are visiting a canyon. On the final day before they leave, the masked woman comes into the room again and murders Sam by stabbing him in his sleep and in the neck. The camera shows the killer and Stephanie kissing in the bathroom, implying that Stephanie had planned this with her, in quotation marks, loved one, as told in her fortune. And the two leave, and Stephanie asks the girl if she erased the footage. Finn. This VHS segment, Second Honeymoon, Joe Swanberg is Sam. Sophia Takal is Stephanie. And Caitlin Shell is Girl. She does not have a name.
Hold on, you're forgetting someone.
I'm going back. Give me 2 seconds.
Stinky Pete.
Stinky Pete the prospector.
Al from Al's Toy Barn.
And this was directed by a Mr. Ty West, which you may know him from several different things. He did this. He did The House of the Devil, where he directed and wrote that movie. He also did, I'm assuming, the segments in the ABCs of Death, because I believe those movies are also...
ABCs of Death, also very fucking good.
Yeah, I believe those are also, like, segmented.
Yeah, very similar premise, just not found footage.
It's just not found footage, yeah.
Yeah.
Anthology, there we go, that's the word I was looking for. And then, of course... He also wrote, directed, produced, edited X, Pearl, and Maxine.
Still haven't seen those either.
And if you don't know him from any of that somehow, he also was Tyreek, the scarf-wearing boyfriend that gets killed first in You're Next.
He also directed and wrote Second Honeymoon in VHS.
He did, in fact, also. Direct Second Honeymoon in You're Next. I also believe Joe Swanberg is in You're Next as well, which is funny.
I think he is, yeah.
Reusing actors. in your movies and your shorts. But that is everything for Second Honeymoon. What are we?
What are
you
your thoughts?
Me to go first?
What are your thoughts, Justin?
The twist from this movie. Boy, do I love twists! What a twist! Do I love twists? I like the twist at the end of this. I like the concept of some of these segments in the first VHS movie a lot more than I really realized until going back and rewatching it.
Mm-hmm.
I really would like them to continue to and return to the almost snuff film-esque like film
say as much style. As you can without spoiling what happens in the rest of the franchise.
Yeah. I that's what I would like.
Yeah.
Not to say that anything else is bad in the franchise, because I don't think there's a bad VHS movie, but we'll get there.
As it progresses, they get a little carried away with what they're doing.
I don't even think that's like too big of a deal. It's only like one of them. But anyway, this is a great segment. I gave it an 8. It's the lowest rated segment I have on here. But not for any faults. Realistically, there's nothing wrong with anything in this movie at all. Like, none of the segments are bad. None of the segments...
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing wrong with any of them.
You said 8.
8.
I still have the same gripe with this one that I've had every time I've watched this movie. And even the very first time I watched it, the exact same complaint. It's just kind of boring. You know? I mean, there's just not, like, it's a little creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets a little creepier, and then it just ends. You know, like, yeah. they kind of spit it all out. So, I mean, the first, and it's very short, I feel like, compared to the other ones.
It is extremely short compared
to
everything
else. Very, very short. You know, most of it is just them on vacation, which, like, okay, I mean, that's cool. But, you know, you get the first night where she doesn't even have a name, the girl breaks into the room and puts his toothbrush in the toilet and steals $100 and leaves. And then, like, before that, she's, like, standing across the street from the hotel, being weird. But then after that, it's, like, the next time we see her, she slits his fucking throat, and then they leave. I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of boring. I just think it's a little boring. I gave it a 6, personally. I liked it, and I will say, I liked it more than I did the first time I watched it, because if I was to give the score from the first time I watched it, it would probably get like a 2 or a 3, because I really did not like it the first time I watched it, but I can appreciate it a little bit more, but it's still far and away the least good one of the first VHS movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Michael.
As Stinky Pete would say, "Hidey ho."
Is that what he would say?
Oh. Shut up. This is definitely the most, I guess, simple plot of all the segments. But I kind of like it, like the almost snuff film-esque style. And while pretty much the twist happens right at the end, so it's not like they were really building up. It's just like stuff happens and then the death things happens. But I kind of like that throughout the thing, even when Sam was distracting me with Toy Story 2, they were kind of building up the motivation as to why this happened in the first place. And whether she is justified or not, like, obviously there was some turmoil in their relationship, and, well, he paid the price for it. So it's very simple, but I like it, so I'll give it like a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Oh, like a side tangent about this thing. I don't know if anyone knows about this, but like years ago, I remember seeing like a VHS tape of like this local rock band called Evil from Outer Space, and it gave me a similar vibe to this because it also dealt with like someone just standing outside, like in the street, all mysteriously. And to this day, I have no idea like what that is, but I just remember it, that's what the vibes it gave me of. So yeah, 7 out of 10.
Really, I think you have possession of a cursed fucking videotape.
Yeah, he's just autistic.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Not from New York.
Well, we leave Second Honeymoon and we go back to tape 56. We have Rox, who is very confused by what he just watched, that being Second Honeymoon, and does not notice that the dead old guy behind him in the chair is no longer a dead old guy behind him in the chair, because he's not there at all.
Yeah, went to take a shit.
And then we go back down to the basement. Zach and Gary are considering making copies of the tape that they are there to steal to get extra money for said tapes. And we leave that, and we go into Tuesday the 17th, which, once again, Justin's going to tell us about.
Tuesday the 17th was directed by Glenn McQuaid, which, ironically, was an additional crew member on The Innkeepers, which was directed by Ty West in 2011. Mm. So there's a little weird little wraparound fact for you. Tuesday the 17th, cast members are Norma C. Cunos as Wendy, Drew Moreland as Joey, Janine Yoder as Samantha, Jason Yachin as Spider, and Bryce Burke as The Glitch. And we start off with four friends: Wendy, Joe, Spider, and Samantha, visiting Wendy's hometown. They go to the woods, where Wendy leads her friends aimlessly through trees. As the group continues to film, the footage shows strange glimpses of bodies, and Wendy starts telling Joey scary and confusing things. The group rests near a river and smoke marijuana. Joey asks Wendy about what she said, or excuse me, what she was saying before. She starts to talk about accidents she had with old friends and a mysterious man, but she laughs and everyone believes she's joking. Spider and Samantha get away from the site, but Samantha is killed by something unseen. Spider tries to run back, but is soon killed as well. The bodies are dragged away, and Wendy comes and finds the camera and then heads back. When she returns to Joey, she finds he has just come from swimming in the lake, and she awkwardly offers him sex. Joey becomes frustrated with Wendy, who explains that the others were killed and she only brought them there as bait to bring in the killer who terrorized her and killed her friends when she was younger. The killer comes again, and we see that the person is a silhouette of a man covered by technical glitches. According to Wendy, he has supernatural powers that allow him to teleport and hide his appearance on camera, though we do see that his face is red with what is mostly blood. The man kills Joey by slitting his throat. Wendy runs away, and we see that she has previously made traps to stop the killer. The first few traps fail, but she eventually stops him in a spiked trap. Wendy gloats that she has finally caught him and people will believe her now. However, she turns around only to see that the glitch man has escaped. She runs away, but falls down and tells the camera and whoever is watching to never come to this area. The killer pounces on her and guts her with a knife as the film ends.
Yeah! Go ahead, Justin.
All right. This is a perfect homage to 80s slashers. I really can't say anything more than that about it. It's very good. It's simple. It's to the point. It's direct. It's not too much. It's not too little. It's not boring in the same way that Second Honeymoon is.
Mm-hmm.
it is very formulaic, and it's very much like if you've seen Friday the 13th or anything like that before, this is definitely something similar. But I think with the glitch as a whole, like the actual character, Killer being what it is much more interesting than something like Jason. And, you know, obviously the kids are there for just fodder, but like that was also the point of them being there, because she literally brought them out there as bait to try and draw them out. So like, you can't really blame them. I don't know. I think it's just like perfect for what little bit of story is there and what it exists for in the context of exactly this movie. I gave this a 10 as well.
Very nice.
Hmm.
All right. What do I even say about Tuesday the 17th? Number one, it's not fucking obvious, the name is a reference to Friday the 13th, which it being the Tuesday that follows Friday the 13th, hence Tuesday the 17th.
Thursday the 20th.
Thursday the 20th. Friday the fucking... Wait a minute. It'd be Friday the 20th. It'd be Thursday the 19th.
Well, I was making the Simpsons joke. The dude with the chain. This is Thursday the 20th.
Chain this.
I'm homophobic. Sorry, I don't watch The Simpsons. So, I mean, this is basically just like, hey, what if we fucking, those 80s slashers that everybody watched so much when they were growing up, what if we made one of those, like, now, like, modern? And that, there you go. The killer is a fucking glitch. He's, like, all weird and pixelated and shit. Yeah, I don't have much to say. Really fucking cool. Like, on it, and I don't even know why, but, like, one of my favorite quotes in any movie ever of all fucking time. You're all gonna fucking die out here. I don't know why that's so cool to me, but I say it all the fucking time. I love that fucking quote. I love that line. Cool kills. The fucking, the knife through the eye. Joey getting his fucking, his throat slit, and then you see him later and he's walking around with his slit throat and he collapses. Even at the end when Wendy dies, you know, he fucking disembowels her on the ground. Like, it's really fucking cool. 10. It gets a 10. Great fucking job. Thank you, Glenn McQuaid. Very good. Mm-hmm. Michael Helbot, it is your turn.
I'll also have to give this a 10 just because I love the premise of this kind of evil thing that can only be detected by recording it. And I just think it's so cool. It's kind of like a new spin on, like, when, like, in horror films when, like, oh, you can only see, like, the creature from, like, a mirror or something else like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very cool, like, modernization of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also joked about how this is pretty much, like, the Blair Witch Project, but horny, gone sexual.
Yeah.
So, you know, also shout-outs to that. So, you know, easy 10 for me. So I liked it. Very gory, so very good.
Very gory, yeah.
Delicious.
Before we move forward, I just realized... I said I didn't give Amateur Night a 10 because it wasn't my favorite, but Tuesday the 17th also isn't my favorite, and I also gave it a 10. So I'm going to go ahead and give Amateur Night a 10 as well. Retroactively, I didn't notice that I did that.
I was waiting for that to happen.
But yeah, so anyway, continuing, we get into the third interlude of Tape 56. The dead old guy is back in the chair, but Rox is no longer in the room. Zach and Gary have come upstairs and now they're confused as to where the fuck everyone went. Gary, this is like, they go in the room, they see all the tapes on the floor. Gary tells Zach to look through the tapes. Zach puts the tape in, and that tape is the sick thing that happened to Emily when she was younger, which will be told to us by Melee Hellbot.
Mm-hmm. The sick thing that happened to Emily when she was younger. Directed by Joe Swanberg. I believe it was written by Simon Barrett and maybe also produced by Simon Barrett. But Sam, can you confirm that for me?
I can confirm. Let me double check the producer credit. Producer Simon Barrett, correct.
Ah, okay. Your cast for this is Helen Rogers as Emily. I wonder what happened to her. Daniel Kaufman as James. Liz Harvey as the new girl. Corey Fitzpatrick as girl alien. Isaiah Hillman as boy alien. Talia Hillman as little girl alien. I wonder what's going to happen. Now.
Yes.
You sick bastard.
A woman named Emily and her boyfriend, James, video chat and talk about her apartment being haunted. James does not believe this, but recorded scares around his apartment occur. Meanwhile, Emily discovers a strange bump in her arm. She sees visions of young children appearing in the night as she tries, and she tries to ask her landlord if anyone has ever died in the apartment, thinking the child is a spirit. The landlord denies this, and more scares continue to happen. As always, landlords are useless. Kill them all. Mm-hmm. One day, Emily wants to go into a room and search with her eyes closed. James guides her, and she soon faces two children, a boy and a girl, who attack her. Emily appears unconscious, and James quickly enters the room with the children, and it is shown that they are working together. As James has always been with her in the apartment, and he extracts a strange fetus-like thing from her back. With some concern for her well-being, he asks them how many times they are going to need him to remove it before no more grow inside her, as well as the tracking device implanted in her arm. They respond with inaudible whispers, and he prepares to break her arm and bruise her eyes to make it look like a car accident again. Before noticing that her webcam is still on, she turns it off, and the scene jumps forward to Emily talking to James with a black eye and her arms in a splint. She tells James how she went to see the doctor he recommended, who diagnosed her as having a mild form of schizophrenia, making her believe that the ghosts were all in her head and that she ran in front of a car and does not remember. They hang up, and the video cuts to James talking to a different lady, and it is shown he is going to repeat the same process with boobies. Finn.
All right, Melee, you go ahead and tell us what you think of the sick thing that happened to Emily when she was younger.
I think this is probably like my favorite of the entire segment.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Compared to all the other ones, this one's the one that features like aliens, but it's still very much eerie, and it kind of brings on the, I guess, this conspiracy of, you know, people working on the inside, and not everything is what it seems. And it's unfortunate how this man pretty much preys on this woman who has no idea what's happened to her, and she gets diagnosed as being crazy. Meanwhile, she's pretty much giving birth to alien fetuses for these other aliens. So who knows how deep this thing goes, but as it shows, he's doing it to other women, so the process is going to continue, and really, the real villain is the guy. He is a piece of shit, and that makes him a terrific villain for that regard, so I'll have to give this a 10, just because of how scary it is. You would expect it to be ghosts, but it's in fact alien, so that's a pretty cool twist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I really do like this one. Creepy fucking kids is the creepiest thing to me. It freaks me the fuck out. This is and with that said, this is the scariest one to me because I little kids freak me the fuck out.
Hi.
It was very well done, like as methodical as you can get with like a short film in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
The methodical build to James being revealed as the one behind all of it. And then, like Melee said, that reveal that it's not ghosts and it's actually aliens instead that are basically using her as like she's just a womb for these.
A host.
Yeah, a host for these like hybrids that they're creating. Also, really cool, like little thing in the background that I missed probably the first five times I watched this, and I didn't notice it until I just, like, my eyes wandered. If you go back and look behind the window on the screen where they're having the webcam chat, mm-hmm. you can see a folder behind that window that is titled Emily. And then when it at the end, when it switches to the different girl, you can see that same folder with a different name. I don't remember her name, but you can see that same folder with a different name. Very cool little, like, minor touch, but really adds to the, what's the word I'm looking for here? The, just kind of rounds it all out. I don't know what word I'm looking for there. Yeah, very cool. Very, very cool. It's a lot different from all the other ones on this one. This one and the next one, I feel like, are very different from the other three in the film. They're just a little more out there, but not to the point where it makes it awkward,
weird,
and feel out of place.
Yeah.
I give this one a 9. Very fucking good. I'm a huge fan of it. Justin.
I like this one a lot. I don't know if it's my favorite. I think Tuesday the 17th might be my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of how, like, dumb familiar it is and how fast it is. But the premise of this one is very interesting. I really like the whole, like, video call into found footage type thing.
Yeah.
I like that found footage is evolving into, you know, using modern technology to do found footage.
Shout out Unfriended. Shout out Host.
Shout out. Yep.
Shout out that other movie that you, me, and Dino watched on Peacock. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the name of it. The British one.
Oh, fuck. That one was so good. Fuck. What was that?
I don't remember what that one was called.
We gotta look that up after this. Yeah. Fucking Bill Hader mixed with Ben Shapiro ass looking dude needs to die, and I hate people who are like this, because they just there are people who exist that are like this in real life.
Yeah,
you could get rid of the alien part of this fucking segment and it would still be just as awful. This gets a 10. Like, I'm being very generous with the first one, but I also don't think this is not necessarily the blueprint, but also we have nothing to base off of.
Right. They did a very good job with all of these, I think. Like, even Second Honeymoon, which I personally wasn't, like, a huge fan of, for what it is, it's still very good. I just think,
and it's short.
Yeah. I just think they could have done more.
If anything.
Yeah. Yeah, so we leave that one and we go back into Tape 56, which will be the last time we visit Tape 56, so we will give our score for that after I finish this here. Mm-hmm. We get back and we see that Gary has returned, but now both Zach and the dead old guy in the chair are both gone now. Gary walks out and he walks towards the stairs, where he sees a decapitated body. He kind of laughs it off, thinking it's a prank, but then he keeps walking and he kicks the head of the decapitated body. And before he can even really react to that, he is then attacked by the dead old guy in the chair, who is now a fucking zombie. Gary runs downstairs, and unfortunately, if you're in the VHS franchise and you're trying to run downstairs, you are going to fall and hurt yourself.
You fell.
And Gary falls and twists his ankle. And then we get this really fucking cool shot. Oh, it's so cool. Gary holding the camera at the bottom of the stairs. We see the zombie dead old fat guy slowly walk down the stairs. We see him come closer and closer in the frame. And then we get a super close up of his fucked up face. And then that's it. He kills Gary. And then the last VHS tape starts playing. But before we get to that, let's talk about Tape 56, aka the wraparound story of the first VHS film. One thing I do want to say real quick, this is very, I did not fucking know this. And very cool when it like comes to found footage and stuff like that. Regardless of what you think of this, it is really cool, and it did play a huge part in like found footage getting a little bigger in the modern age. The house that these guys broke into, like where all the tapes are, like where most of Tape 56 happens.
Oh yeah.
It is the same house from Marble Hornets. If you're not familiar with Marble Hornets was the found footage web series from YouTube that popularized Slenderman.
Yep.
Mm.
Very fucking interesting. I never knew that, and I think that is very fucking cool, because Slenderman was a huge part in like, and like, I mean, whether or not you think it's scary or you think it's cool or you just think it's dumb, like whatever. But Slenderman was played a huge role in like found footage and analog horror getting as popular as it is right now.
Yeah.
Played a huge role in that, you know, if not like, it sounds dumb to say it, but I think for the 2010s, it played just as big a role in found footage and analog horror. I would say mainly analog horror, but found footage too. That like the Blair Witch Project did in the 90s. I know that sounds crazy to say, but
it probably is correct.
Slenderman was fucking huge. Like, you couldn't go anywhere without knowing what the fuck that was.
Yes.
So yeah, really cool. I don't know if that was like a conscious effort that they made to use that house, or if it was just a convenience thing. But either way, it's really cool that those, they're tied together. As far as the wraparound goes, it's a little all over the place. Like, I didn't mention that at times during the wraparound, like while we're going through, we get like these random cuts in the tape, like a failed sex tape has been taped over the burglary, or the burglary has been taped over this failed sex tape.
Yes.
It's a little awkward. It's a little all over the place as far as that goes. I do really like the idea of kind of what's happening here, and I think it's a good way of setting up where the franchise is going to go, because spoiler alert, this is not the end of this, this story per se. As far as like what happened in the house, this isn't the last time you see it. It does come back and it does play into the next film. So I think it's a cool way to get it set up and kind of give us all the events of what's happening. The dead old dude turning into a zombie, really fucking cool. They made him look really good.
Thank you.
The uneasiness of being in the house, like there's no lights on at any point. Like it's complete darkness. Pretty cool, I thought. I thought it could have been a little cooler, could have been done a little better. Honestly, take out the weird stuff with like the sex tape, and I would give it like an extra point probably, because I just thought it was completely unnecessary and didn't need to be there. I understand why it was there. I thought, I get it was there to kind of play off how shitty these dudes are. But the simple fact that they sexually assaulted a woman to make money off of it tells me how shitty they are already. I don't need extra stuff added onto it. It just made it feel a little awkward. But yeah, so I give Tape 56 an 8, which, it's not easy to give it a score because it's not just one story all at once like all the other ones are. It is segmented by the segments, so it's like a little hard to, it can be a little hard keeping track of everything. Yeah, I give it an 8. I thought it was pretty good. Justin.
I don't watch the VHS movies for the wraparound, if I'm being completely honest with you.
Fair, me either, honestly.
That being said, cut to me in VHS 2 when I say that the wraparound's very good. Anyway.
Cut to me in viral when I complain about
and then there's that wraparound. And then there's that one where we just bitch and moan about it for the whole fucking podcast. I just gave it a 7. I don't know, man. Okay. What am I supposed to do here?
Like, yeah, I mean, it's a little awkward trying to give it like a score or anything, because it is so like, you know, like I said, it's segmented by the segment, so it's a little hard to keep it all in one, like on one track.
Yeah. And piggybacking off of Sam's fun fact about the Slenderman stuff, on the completely opposite end of that spectrum, the word fuck is said around 240 times in the movie.
Melee.
Well, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
Easily the worst movie in the Halloween franchise.
Yeah, true. Real. I agree.
Like these crackers have said, it's kind of hard to judge like this story as a whole because it's pretty much like fragmented throughout this entire experience.
Mm-hmm.
But if I really had to judge it, I'll probably have to give it a 6 out of 10 just because, to be honest, like everything that happens, it's pretty much like, I guess, for lack of a better term, like bare bones. Like they pretty much are just going to the next segment. There's not much that happens. You know, stuff is happening in the background, but nothing really like happens. It just goes like, oh, switch to another tape, and here we go, next segment.
Mm-hmm.
So from that perspective, like the story is like whatever, but. Like Samethan said, like, you know, the zombie reveal was really cool. So that's what gives it the 6 out of 10.
All right. Well, we also leave. Oh, go ahead.
Like, the dudes are assholes. We have absolutely no reason to care about them. And when they get killed, we have absolutely no reason to care about them dying.
Right. Yeah.
So, like,
it's a means to an end. Like, you have to have a reason why you're seeing these tapes.
Yes.
It's the same thing with like any kind of film that does that. Like All Hallows Eve, you had to have a reason why you were seeing that stuff too. It's just, you know, it's not like terribly important how you do that, but it should make sense. And I think they did the reason I gave it such a good score is I think they gave it a good reason as to why we were seeing those tapes and how we were seeing them and like what was going on with it. I think they did a good job with that. VHS 2 also does a good job with it.
Thank you.
VHS Viral?
Maybe better.
Anyway. So we leave Tape 56 for the very last time, and we go into 10/31/98, which Michael will once again tell us about.
Mm-hmm. Directed and written by Radiant Silence Productions, which consists of...
Debut.
Mm-hmm. Matt Bellatini, open. Tyler Gillette, Justin Martinez, and Chad Vanilla. Those are of Radio Silence. The cast includes Chad Villa as Chad.
Whoa. Mm.
Matt Betty Lenny open as Matt. Tyler Gillette as Tyler. Paul Nadernek as Paul. Nicole Erb as, you guessed it, the girl. John Walcott as cult leader, and Eric Curtis as the roommate, and special appearance by Thomas the Tank Engine.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was real. Albert Train.
Yeah. Oh no.
Same difference. Busy.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
There you go.
10/31/98. Chad, Matt, Tyler, and Paul. Spend a lot. Dressed in Halloween costume as the Unabomber, a pirate, a nanny cam, and a marine, respectively. Head out to a Halloween party at a stranger's house, but soon find the house deserted. Mmm, yummy. They get in through the back and think the house is actually a haunted attraction. As they search around, the camera comes from Tyler's nanny cam in his bear costume and shows distorted visions of ghosts. The friends hear loud chanting from the attic and interrupt a group of people seemingly assaulting a bound young woman. They think this is a joke at first, but soon realize the truth when the leader assaults the woman violently and strange hands emerge from the walls and the cult members are pulled to the ceiling. The guys get downstairs but decide to return and rescue the girl, not realizing that they are interrupting an exorcism. Just as they save her, more haunting and disturbing paranormal events prevent them from escaping via the front door. They exit through the basement and get into the car, but when they begin to question the woman, she disappears and reappears beside the window as a demon-like figure. The car starts to move by itself. The friends witness the woman leave into the night, and they realize that their car is on the train tracks and that the doors are sealed shut. They attempt to break the windows as they see a train approaching. The final video ends as the friends are killed by the oncoming train. Finn. And that's it.
Do you want to talk about the joke ending?
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up.
Because, I swear to God, every time I watch this fucking movie, I think about that, like, Mandela effect-wise.
So Radio Silence, they did a joke ending for this one where the doors just unlocked and they all just got out of the car and walked away, and then the train hits the car and fucking explodes. they shot it. They actually shot it. I don't know if it exists, but I would like to see
it. It does exist. We can watch it.
I would like to watch that after we're done here. So that's all. I do have another silly little thing. The soldier, the guy who's in costume as a soldier, this one is set in 1998. The soldier is wearing digital camo pants. Digital camo didn't exist until late 2001. Just a little thing.
It's like something else that happened in 2001.
Mm-hmm. Something else in late 2001. Right, Melee, tell us what you thought about 103198.
I really like how this one pretty much just goes balls to the walls with, pretty much... You can think of any, stereotypes or, tropes about, hauntings, and you'll pretty much get it through this entire segment.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny seeing, the typical, group of, they're, young people find this, this haunted place, and then they start seeing crazy shit. And, the Scooby-Doo gang, they just interrupt an exorcism, and more batshit crazy things happen. I almost feel like half of the budget just went towards this. And as expected, the woman they were rescuing is also a part of this whole thing. So they all end up dying, which is a pretty cool way. It was very nice that they foreshadowed this early because they were showing the train early in the movie.
Yep.
In the back of my mind, I was thinking, damn, imagine they just the train just runs them over. So it's pretty cool.
Say that out loud.
In my brain, I was foreshadowing.
I didn't say anything. I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
It was pretty nice that it came full circle. But yeah, it almost feels like this whole thing could have been its own movie just because of how much they put into it.
Mm.
It's almost, I don't know how they filmed this thing, how, the whole, all the segments were structured, but it almost feels like this gave off the energy of they're filming for the last day. Let's all go batshit crazy and have fun.
Right.
And that's pretty much what happens here. So I have to give this a 9 out of 10 for this one.
Melee, you're talking about the, how well they did. I don't know if you realize do you know who Radio Silence is?
No.
Radio Silence did the, did Ready or Not and Scream 5 and Scream 6.
And 6.
But this was their debut. This is the first thing they ever did. So, you can nice. See the vision. You can see the vision already with this.
Yep.
Which is why I give 103198 a 10 because they did a great fucking job. This is my favorite one in the entire film. You saved the best for last. It fucking happened. Everything's done in a really well way. It does Melee said. It's just. Fucking dudes being dudes and, until it's not and it all goes south for them and they end up fucking dying for it. And it's one of those things of how altruistic is too altruistic, and they found out how altruistic is too altruistic by dying, by trying to save this girl who assumedly is possessed by a demon. Sucks for him. Really sucks. 10. Very fucking good. This is my favorite one in the whole movie, which says a lot because all of these very fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Justin.
It's the complete opposite of the people we're following for the whole movie.
Yeah, it really is.
And they die for it, which is fucked, which I mean, yes, the other guys die for it before the segment starts, but still.
Yeah.
Radio Silence. Having had watched their later work and then seeing this, this is absolutely just what Radio Silence does.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more you could say about it. Everything they do is great. I love everything they do. obviously with them actually being in the movie, the segment, it's even funnier. Yeah, 10. Fucking, I don't have anything more to say about it.
I want to add like one more thing. Like watching this segment, it almost reminds me like I'm watching like a Rocka Rocka video. It gave me similar vibes.
Yeah,
you know, just throwing things out there and having fun.
You know,
makes for a good time.
It's funny you mentioned them because we'll be covering something of theirs soon.
Are we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. I'll have to look further into that because I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. Before we go any further, because Justin's gonna read what the people think of it, and then after that I gotta do the math and add up everyone's scores for the shorts to give their full score for the movie. I just have to say, man, this came out October 2012. I had to have seen I watched this at my friend's house when I was in high school. Had to have been, if it wasn't late 2012, it was early 2013. And we put it on, we had no fucking idea what it was. Holy fuck, dude. I wish, this is another one of the, I've said, I don't know if I've said this on recording, but this is like, I've said this to Justin a few times about some movies. This is one of those movies I wish I could get dementia and watch for again for the first time. Like the feeling that I had watching this for the first time, it was like I had stumbled upon something that I didn't know I needed in my life.
This is your brain dead.
This is my brain dead. It really is. Like, you know, I had seen like the Blair Witch Project and Paranormal Activity. And so like I liked those kind of movies, but I didn't really fully comprehend. I mean, I was 16 when I watched this, so I hadn't really fully comprehended like found footage as a genre of movie. I just looked at Blair Witch Project and Paranormal Activity as like those are just horror movies, and VHS is kind of what opened my brain to found footage as a subgenre, and my ass. And it, like, I don't know, dude. I look at this so fondly. Like, is it the best movie in the world? No, it's not. But it, I put VHS above so many other movies that I would consider better because of what it means to me. Because found footage is, I hold it so close to my heart. It's so good. I love it so much. It's so fun. And VHS played a huge role into me discovering that. This was my found footage awakening with VHS. So thank you, VHS, and everyone involved in it. I know you're never going to hear this, and whatever, that's fine. But genuinely, thank you, because you led me to every other found footage movie that I've watched after this. Because you took me down a fucking rabbit hole. I will also never forget waiting for VHS 2 and VHS Viral to come out. Anyway, yeah, continue. Sorry about that. Justin,
we didn't start.
Yeah, Justin, tell us what the people think.
All right, the critics and the people. Top critics and all critics for VHS. Top critics 60%, all critics 57%, all audiences 41%. This movie got very middle of the road reviews on the Rotten Tomatoes and the all that. So I'm going to start with the critic reviews. These ones I did not pre-write down before we recorded. I did pre-write down the audience reviews. I kind of changed up how I do things. So let's get into this. There's not very many critic reviews, but I'm still going to skip around a little bit. So starting with the very earliest one from January 27th of 2012. It's telling that the most satisfying segment in VHS was directed by a group called Radio Silence. The segment's varying quality and the whole overstays its welcome at nearly 2 hours.
I can't agree with that. That's another thing I forgot to say. This, it has a pretty long runtime.
I did not feel
Dude,
like it was.
I looked over at the recording time at one point, and we were already like past an hour, and I couldn't. I genuinely couldn't believe it. I didn't say anything, but I genuinely could not believe we were already past an hour.
I really did not feel that way.
It does. I do not think it was too long.
I do not feel gassed after watching the movie.
I was about to say if it weren't already like almost 10:30, I would say we can watch the second one tonight because I really want
exactly.
to. Like, I don't think it was too long at all. I think that's a crazy take.
Refreshingly, VHS promises no more than it delivers. Always a plus with genre fans.
Yeah. Okay.
All of the short films are genuinely unnerving, and the point of view camera work is at times startling.
Good review.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
In too many of the shorts, bad acting quickly undermines the authenticity, the aesthetics labor to achieve.
Whatever the fuck that means.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Robert Ebert. What's the point? None of the segments is particularly compelling. Strung together, it's way too much of a muchness.
What?
Word for word. The Blair Witch Project meets Mumblecore.
What?
That's crazy.
That's funny as fuck. You want the Blair Witch meets Mumblecore? Go watch Creep.
Yeah, real.
Not for the faint of heart or easily motion sick.
Hmm.
No one should be expected to endure all 115 minutes of this nonsense. Fuck you.
Fuck off. Get over it.
VHS probably sounded great in the pitch meeting, but it loses all its luster through some shoddy execution.
I don't know, man. I can't agree with that.
A nauseating experience on every level.
Okay.
Smart, scary stuff.
There you go.
And the review that I'm assuming is supposed to be negative, to end it off for the critic reviews, that I just don't get. It says, I came, I saw, I hunkered. I don't know what that means.
I think that may be positive, like hunkering in fear.
Maybe.
That's how I'm taking that.
I just don't know what that means, but we're gonna that's what it is. Now for the audience reviews. Ooh. So here's my question for you. Do you want me, because I have it listed from 5 stars to 1.5 star, or like half a star. Fuck. Do you want me to jump around, or do you want me to just go from highest to lowest, or lowest to highest?
You can jump around.
Okay. I'm going to start with the one that I think is the most relevant for the remainder of the franchise, which is 3 stars. Some stories are really good, and others trash.
Okay. I don't know if I'd say trash.
Not for this particular movie, but I just think for the franchise as a whole, I think that's pretty
accurate for the entire
franchise. Mm-hmm. 4 stars. One of the great modern horror films. One that brings back the fun of the anthology series while splicing it with reality horror suspense and over-the-top paranormal gore.
Okay.
Half star. I made an account just so I can say how much this movie sucked. If you're into terrible storylines, lots of essay scenes, and shaky headache-inducing cinematography, this movie is for you.
You just don't like found footage, dog. That's okay. I mean, that's fine. I get that. You just don't like found footage. Just shut the fuck up.
One star. This movie was stupid.
Cool.
At least they're honest.
Me reviewing old.
True. 4 stars. A really good movie. Very interesting and creative. A cool concept. This is a good movie. This is you reviewing this movie.
Good movie. Very good movie.
That's why I put that on here. 5 stars. It was good. Must see. The eyes emoji.
Good movie. Very good movie.
5 stars. Creative. Entertaining. Yeah, the fucking eyes, just the eyes.
Nah, ice emoji, you know.
5 stars. Creative, entertaining, and scary. You can't go wrong. This movie is lots of fun.
Oh, I agree.
Fun, campy horror. Watch it with a buddy on a drinking night. Mm. That's every night, brother.
Yeah, let him know. Let him know. My favorite alcoholic, Justin Havoc. Almost said your shoot name.
At times, 2 stars, at times creepy and disturbing, and at times yawn inducing. VHS is a clever idea, just not very well executed. This film helps define the term gore porn.
Gore porn? Not this one. What the fuck? I mean, it got a little gory, sure, but what?
That is by far probably the worst review that I've found. And it's not even like the worst star rated review.
Yeah, that's...
And the final 2 half-star reviews.
The worst film in the Halloween franchise.
This movie sucks so horribly. A bunch of short stories about random shit. I was so confused the whole time. Shitty directing.
Me when my brain doesn't work.
And then I had to include this one. White boys with money and cameras. Not good. Worst horror movie ever.
Real. All right.
I thought that was like my 5-star review.
You know what? You might be onto something. Can I also say? I'm thinking about this again.
You need to cut that noise out of this recording so we can use it.
I'd just like to also say that my friend that I watched this movie with when we were in high school does not like horror movies, and he still talks to me about this movie like all the time. He fucking really liked it.
Mark.
Good.
Yeah, kill yourself. Anyway. as far as our scores go, just in case anyone wasn't paying attention, I'll explain it once again. It felt a little awkward for us to take this entire movie in as a whole being and then try to spit out a rating. And I felt it would be more accurate if we rated each short and then took those scores that we gave each short, added them up, and got our average score for the entire film. So that is what I have done, and here's what we have gotten. I have an 8.8 for myself. Justin has a 9.2, and Melee has an 8.7, which works out to an overall average score of 8.9 for the first VHS film. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
Of course, next week we're going to be watching VHS 2. We'll be watching VHS Viral after that, which will complete the first quote-unquote trilogy of VHS, and then we do have 4 more after that. If you are not, I will warn you now, if you are not a fan of found footage movies, you might want to take some weeks off. Because I'm not going to say I didn't realize that when I did it. I did this shit on purpose. We have a block of found footage movies coming up for the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... For the next 2 months, we got you locked in with found footage. The next 8 episodes are all found footage films.
Halloween, found footage.
Well, we kind of already watched that, actually. That was Resurrection. Yeah, Dino couldn't be here with us tonight. He popped in for a little bit at the end of the movie. But he said since he didn't get to watch the entire movie, he has seen it before, but since he didn't get to watch the entire movie with us, he decided to not be on. So he should be back next week. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. And of course, as always, if you want to go watch the film with us, you can go watch it at patreon.com/udamright. Throw us $1 a month and you can get all the 3 from Hell content. Throw us $2 and you can get all of the 3 from Hell and udamright content. Give us a follow on Spotify and Apple Podcast and leave us a review so we can, get to more people's ears and tell your friends. Everybody's looking for a new podcast to listen to, and I feel like this one is, well, we do get a little stupid. It's a lot better than the fucking YDR podcast, so.
True. Yeah.
It's a lot better. But yeah, we got a lot of fun stuff coming up. I love the VHS franchise. As I said, I just poured my heart out for it earlier. But yeah, I'm really stoked. Not so stoked about one of them, but I'm very stoked about all the others. And yeah, we'll see you next week. Do you guys have anything to add before we leave?
Go see Nosferatu.
Yeah, go see Nosferatu. I'm going to go see it Sunday.
Evil from outer space.
Yeah, go watch that. Melee put the link in the Discord. I'm going to watch that after we're done here.
Melee, go see Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Melee's going with me Sunday.
Yeah. Holding hands.
But yeah, thank you guys for listening. Thank you for subscribing to the Patreon if you are a patron. Thank you guys for a great first year of the Three From Hell podcast, as we are, well, we're recording this in 2024 still, but when this goes up, it'll be 2025. So thank you for the, for supporting us through our first year of existence. We're looking forward to a great second year. We have a lot of really cool shit and, some fucked up shit that we're doing just for Melee. Yep, that's about it. That's all I got to say. What's the outro song? Don't know. Probably won't be one. See you next week. I'm Sam. Justin's here. Melee's here. We're the OG three from hell. Love you. Bye.
We miss you, Tony.
We miss you, Tony. Hopefully he'll be back soon. I hope so. I love you.
Squeak, squeak.
Squeak, squeak. Bye.